Hello, my friends. This is Brett Kiesling of the EO Podcast Network and host of the ESOP Podcast. We have a fun episode of the Owner to Owner Podcast for you today. Host Jesse Tyler invited previous podcast guests, Sarah Limoges of Admix and Tyson Hendrickson of Pacific Steel and Recycling, to come back on the podcast to talk about Corey Rosen and John Case's most recent book called Ownership: Reinventing Companies, Capitalism, and Who Owns What, which came out in September 2022. What Jesse didn't tell Sarah and Tyson is that they would be joined mid-episode by very special guest Corey Rosen, who has played such a critical role in growing employee ownership in the United States and around the world for more than 40 years. I want to express our appreciation to Corey Rosen, as well as his co-author John Case, to Jesse's guests Sarah and Tyson, and to Jesse Tyler himself for coming up with a fun way to surprise his guests on the podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Owner to Owner Podcast with your host, Jesse Tyler, part of the EO Podcast Network.
Hi, listeners of the Owner to Owner Podcast. It's great to have you back again. I'm Jesse Tyler, and I work at Hypertherm Associates. I've been here. I just celebrated my 16th year. Is wonderful. 15 years participating in our employee ownership plan, and I am very enthusiastic about employee ownership, any form of worker equity. But I work at an ESOP, and I like to share the stories of the ESOPs and bring this to a larger audience. So the goal is of the Owner to Owner podcast is to have discussions about a wide range of ownership experience and culture topics to bring more insight into the individual owner experience. We'll often talk to and feature rank and file workers, voices you would never hear. The goal of this episode is to hear two employee owners and friends and prior guests on different episodes of the Owner to Owner podcast, have them discuss Corey Rosen and John Case's new book, Ownership: Reinventing Companies, Capitalism, and Who Owns What. It's a great read, and it elevates the employee ownership conversation and brings some insight from different models and different countries. And as a big fan of the National Center for Employee Ownership and wanting to amplify, which is what this podcast is all about, bring the voices, spread the audience, inform. We're excited to have Tyson Hendrickson from Pacific Steel and Sarah Limoges from Admix back again. So I want to have them introduce themselves. What I like to do is always have the disclaimer that we are recording this between three very busy manufacturing companies. The audio may or may not be ideal, but hopefully listeners will take that as authenticity. If there's any hiccups, you can hear a little bit of the machining in the background in my building. And so I appreciate everyone just rolling with that. So to get us started, Sarah, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about yourself? That'd be great.
Absolutely. So hi, everyone. My name is Sarah Limoges. I'm an inside sales engineer for Admix, which is an employee-owned company, 100% employee-owned. We've been 100% employee-owned since 2017, but we originally sold to an ESOP in 2001. So we've been an ESOP for over 20 years now. As I said, I'm an inside sales engineer here at Admix. So we manufacture inline and in-tank mixing equipment for industrial manufacturers. Our equipment's used for anything from candies to food to cosmetics to chemicals. And yeah, it's been a wild ride. I've been here for about 2 years now. And before Admix, this is my first real career job. So before Admix, I had done a lot of stuff in retail and customer service. So I did a lot of work in restaurants. And I also worked in the lab at Anheuser-Busch for a few summers. So that was my other career experience in a company that was not an employee-owned company versus now where I am here at Admix. So happy to be here and excited for the rest of the show.
Awesome. Thanks. Appreciate you coming back. Tyson, a little bit about yourself for the listeners, please.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. And thanks again, Jesse, for the invite. It's always fun to hang out. So my name is Tyson Hendrickson. My official title is Training and Development Manager for Pacific Steel and Recycling. So kind of what our employee ownership story is, you know, we started the ownership process actually back in 1989 when we started to buy back you know, shares from the Thebus family, the founding family. And then we became 100% employee owned in 1998. So we're a pretty mature ESOP company, but it's been awesome to kind of, again, be a part of passing it from one generation of employee owners to the next, and feeling like we have that responsibility to carry the torch for that next group going forward. As far as kind of what I do, that's always a fun question. I think both of you can probably relate to that, because as an employee owner, it's, you know, again, you have a title of training and development manager, but then you also have maybe 20 other hats that you're going to be wearing. And that's the power of employee ownership too, though, as well. It's whatever the job is, if you're asked for that, then, you know, and it can help bring value to your team and the company, then, you know, then you're wanting to do that. But a lot of the stuff for me is really focused on the culture side of employee ownership. So that can get me into leadership development, to helping spearhead our continuous improvement kind of programs within the company, to give our people a platform to share ideas and make things better for all of us, and dabble in some onboarding with new hires as well on the ownership side of stuff, so we can help people hopefully really see the value of ownership earlier in their career, as opposed to having to wait 20 years to see that, and a few other things. So, and I'm calling out of Great Falls, Montana. That's where we're based out of, our headquarters out of Great Falls. So thank you again for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you both aboard. You mentioned the onboarding and the hats, and I was just sort of smiling. I've actually used, if it helps you at all in a presentation, I've actually used a picture of an incredibly long hat rack as a single image with no words to describe employee ownership. And I think that, you know, when you touched on that, I think that it is the worker's life of many hats to make it all flow. So it's fun to talk about that. So I want to jump in with a couple questions. The first one is, what is the same or different working at an ESOP versus a non-ESOP? Well, this grew out of my own interest in certainly enjoying the cupcakes and the gatherings and the bright side of an energetic employee owner, but also I find really curious, you know, what are some of the harder parts? What are some different parts? And I found this question be an opportunity to just call it out. So it tends to be that employee owners are pretty enthusiastic about it. And so instead of, you know, what's good or bad, it's so much as what's different, so that somebody listening, the ultimate goal of the podcast, you know, the broad umbrella is amplifying ownership. A specific part tucked into that is, you know, maybe somebody is listening who's thinking of selling to their employees and has that in mind and starting, you know, what can be a long process. And maybe here's a little bit of their workers in your voices. And so to kind of go directly to them, I started asking this question just informally and on the podcast as well. So Sarah, if you want to kick us off, what's the same or different working at an ESOP versus a non-employee owned company?
Sure. As I said, I have a pretty limited experience working at a non-ESOP company, as this is my first career. But when I was working at Anheuser-Busch, I mean, there's a huge culture difference between working at a non-ESOP and working for an ESOP. At Admix, I'm the chair of our ownership crew, so I've been involved in culture conversations since day one. And I knew before I even accepted the job at Admix that culture was going to be something that's very important to me in the job that I'm looking for. I noticed at Anheuser-Busch, while it was unionized, so employees had a little bit of say, a lot of that union still catered towards Anheuser-Busch as a company. And they didn't take ownership of their job. I often saw throughout the day, like I worked in the lab, and I often saw people, if it's close to the end of the shift and there's a task they don't want to do, I'm leaving it till the next, because I want to get out of here and go home to my family where it really matters. I'm just here for a 9-to-5, and I'm just here for the benefits because it's Anheuser-Busch. Whereas working at an employee-owned company, you'll never see that. You see people staying late just to get things done so that we can be more profitable and to make things easier. So that's the number one difference that I've noticed being at an employee-owned company. But it's also the pride people take in their work. Working at Admix, working for a manufacturing company, I came in, I have a chemistry degree. This was never anything that I thought I would end up in sales. And even when I was initially offered the job, I was very much on the fence because I was looking for a chemistry job. I was looking for a job working in a lab doing analytical work. And this was not that. by a long shot. However, the benefits through the ESOP that were provided to me were way better than any other entry-level job that I was looking for at the time, even in chemistry. And being a sales job, I was surprised by that, but I said, you know, let's give it a chance. Let's see what this has to offer. And worst comes to worst, I try something else out. But this employee-owned thing intrigued me right off the bat. And as soon as I came in, that culture was different. There's people talking, like you said, there's the cupcakes, there's the food, but there's also the education, people taking ownership of that education, learning about financial literacy, learning about what ownership really means, and trying to do things every day to help out their fellow co-owners and make us a better place to work. It's been the ride of a lifetime to learn all about this, and I'm excited to see where it goes. So I don't have a whole lot of experience at a non-ESOP company, but there's a lot of things ESOP companies do where you just can't find anywhere else. So
that's great. That's great. And I think, you know, ownership is a long-term game, and your shares build over time and your tenure and all of that. I personally find some of the more fascinating perspectives are folks brand new to ownership. I recently interviewed a coworker, Kelsey, who works out in the field in sales in Vancouver, and she's been with us, I think by the time I recorded it, maybe 9 months. And it's just amazing because even in the first couple of weeks, when you ask people what ownership means to them, even though they're not technically participating, they can have an eloquence and an insight that's almost indistinguishable from somebody like, you know, 11 years for Tyson or 16 for me. So I'm always cheering for the new voices of ownership. So never step back because you're new. All the voices are important. Tyson, for you, what's the same or different? You know, what's really looking at the difference for you working at, you know, Pacific Steel as an ESOP for the last 11 years, if you look back to your career before then?
So I didn't touch on, so if I was, as far as non-ESOP kind of work experience, I also dabbled in the restaurant industry for, that was actually probably 6 years. I did human resources for a franchise group that was in casual dining. And if I'm at least comparing the two, you know, this was a good question where it's like, well, what's the same? I mean, at the end of the day, we're still in the business of business, you know? I mean, and so from that standpoint, it's profit is important to us just as much as I feel like, you know, anybody else, right? It's adding customer value to making sure that we're taking care of our customers, take, you know, whatever. I think some of those goals are the same. I think, though, what Sarah touched on, I think the key difference between a non-ESOP and an ESOP is really the means of how we get there. You know, it's what do we feel like is the foundation and the building blocks to maximize our profit, you know, and the focus isn't necessarily profit in and of itself. You know, it's through the people first and in the environment that we give our people. I think when you're giving ownership to your people, that in itself is seeing people in a completely different lens, you know, where we're saying, you know what? Yeah, we're going to give you ownership. We're going to give you a stake in this company because we believe that you're more than just like a worker bee. You're capable of being more than that, right? And it's just pulling that kind of maximum potential, I think, out of people. And I can relate. So from that standpoint, you know, again, from a non-ESOP company, I think it's very easy for you can clock in, clock out, and you don't necessarily have someone that's pushing you to be even more and really to kind of bring out, again, that the best version of yourself, where an employee-owned company sees that potential where maybe you don't see it day one or year one because you come from a non-ESOP background. But it's, no, your voice matters. And guess what? You probably have ideas to make a process better, you know? And you hear a manager say that, where your own boss could be like, hey, I'm not the one who's doing the process. You're closest to it. What do you think we should do here? That's a complete shift in I think, how ESOP companies kind of manage people. And it's much more participatory, as Sarah said, whether it's through financial literacy and sharing more from that standpoint or other stuff. So
that's great. Yeah, that's great from both of you. I appreciate it. That's the insight that we're looking for. I think one way I've said it, if it works for you both, is that I think in the good times, you pointed at other people. You did this. I saw you do that. You're leading us forward. When things get hard, as counterintuitive as this likely sounds, which I'll own, I think it's the most interesting time to work at an ESOP is when things get hard, because people are more likely to point at themselves and say, okay, what else can I do? What else can we do? How can our team adjust? You know, our team my team in Learning Develop just lost a very talented teammate to an opportunity that would anyone should have said yes to, that she had earned somewhere else, an incredible promotion. It's like, okay, then we say our goodbyes and we pull in tight. We look at ourselves and we look at each other and say, okay, how are we going to get through our commitments with losing one of our superstars? And that's, you know, so it pulled it in. So I appreciate your insights. So I wanted to have a little bit of fun on the podcast, and I hope that Sarah and Tyson, you're not too annoyed with me that Corey Rosen is joining us for the rest of the ride. I thought it would be a little bit of fun. Maybe
cool.
a little bit of humor, a low-key gotcha for you with three friends that correspond quite a bit with Corey and have gotten his advice, and he's helped Hypertherm with different insights and advice. And we just like to talk about ownership. So Corey, welcome aboard to the Owner to Owner. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Thanks, Jesse. Thanks, everybody.
So what I'm going to do is go through one more question before we start to talk about the book. And then John Case wasn't able to join us today, but I have a statement from him really to share with you and the listeners. So we'll get to that, those things later. But what I wanted to do is start again with Sarah with the great question in employee ownership community, and then go Tyson and then to Corey. What does ownership mean to you?
This is the loaded question, right? Yeah, ownership means to me more than anything, and I've said it from day one. It's that, what's the word I'm looking for? That comfort and just knowing that I'm going to be taken care of, that my work every day, it's not just compensated in my salary, but I'm going to be able to retire with a decent chunk that I will feel comfortable with. Now, I come from, you know, very lower middle class roots. Both my parents have had to work, you know, my entire life. And when I was in my teens, my parents ended up getting divorced. And my mother has had a very, very hard time, you know, housing three kids, feeding three kids, and then, you know, kind of starting her career all over and having to find a house and watching her struggle through all that and seeing her now, like, really starting to worry about her retirement. She's edging up on, you know, her mid-50s and getting closer to that retirement time. And she's not sure when she's going to be able to retire, how comfortably she'll be able to retire, especially with Social Security looking the way it is. She's very stressed about those things. And me going into the workforce, I was really scared because I'm like, you know, I want to be a mom. I want to have a family. And I don't know how I'm going to be able to make it all happen between paying off my school loans, buying a house in this economy, trying to raise children, and still make a savings so that I can retire at a reasonable age, not when I'm 80, and then actually be able to enjoy retirement. And as I said before, one of the biggest reasons I accepted this job, despite it being out of my wheelhouse, was because of the ESOP. I saw it as, you know, okay, maybe this is a chance for me to start to build that generational wealth that my family's had such a hard time building until now. And the more and more I've learned about it, the more and more I felt empowered by it, because it really truly gives me that vehicle to have some stability later in life. And that's everything. That is absolutely everything, especially the way this economy is right now. It's a scary time with capitalism, the way we have it right now. Because Corey, I loved how in your book you talked about, we're not trying to abolish capitalism, we're trying to make more capitalists. And that is truly exactly what we need, because I've always said up until I read this book, like, I hate capitalism. I hate how it is, because it's only the few who succeed. And the rest of us who are doing the work, the day-to-day work, don't get to see any of the profits of it. We work till the day we die. And it feels like we're just workforces for these CEOs who get all the money. Whereas, no, ESOPs create more capitalists. We actually get to put in and see the fruit of our labor. And there is no replacement. There's no other, that's the way capitalism should function.
That's great. That's great. And just to add a point. So what I hear you saying is, you know, your sense of security and that things are going to be okay, and that you're going to have, you know, that retirement that might be far out for you earlier in your career, but it makes today different, it made yesterday different, it makes tomorrow different for Sarah coming to work, knowing the longer term view, the money comes later, but the experience is today. And I think of that.
Absolutely, because I don't have to put just my salary into savings constantly. I can use my salary to buy that house, to raise a family, to have my kids in the different activities they want, which I don't have children yet, but that's in the future. And I can use my salary to live on, which is what a salary is for. And I can live on that salary comfortably knowing that I will have something for my retirement, not just my 401k that I also have to pay into. The fruits of my labor that I worked for 40 years will have built up over time into something that I can rely on.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. And for the insights too. Tyson, I mean this always when I've asked people, I've probably asked a couple thousand people in over the years. So it is the big question. What does ownership mean to you?
I can't just say what Sarah said. I mean, she covered it pretty well. when I think about it, especially being 11 years in, especially when you have a little bit, some more years to really see it grow, you know, too, it's everything. And I can't imagine, you know, Sarah had mentioned, you know, again, like even Pacific for me, it wasn't necessarily what we did that attracted me to Pacific Steel and Recycling. You grow to love that once you get into the company. And I'm very proud of what we do both on the steel and recycling side, but it was really the employee ownership part of it that drew me in. And, you know, I also come from a middle-class family where, you know, I mean, my dad still is, he just turned 70 in February and he's still delivering pizza part-time, you know. Now they're getting very close to being able to, you know, I think the retirement looks okay, but they've really had to grind that out. And, you know, again, that's with their hard earned money, you know, right? That wasn't necessarily just given to them or, you know, whatever else. But I wrote down on here, it's and don't take this the wrong way, or I have to make sure it's not misinterpreted, but because my family isn't, you know, again, middle class, 11 years in now, when I look at like what's on my ESOP, I almost feel like I came from a family, like I'm a trust fund baby, you know, because of the ESOP, you know, and it's awesome. And I'm super appreciative of that. I don't, you know, again, I'm careful in comparing it to trust fund because everything that we do, like you have to earn it, you know, we're not looking for a handout. And technically, yes. When you work for an ESOP company, it can feel free, you know, and it is to a certain extent, right? But, you know, when we show up every single day, there's a lot of responsibility with that. And, you know, that's the beauty of an ESOP, though. I mean, everything we do every single day, we're earning that, you know, when we finally see that value kind of grow on our ESOP statement. So it's, to me, it's the ultimate gift that you can give, you know, give someone that has to. We all have to choose a career and do something, right? And to me, there's no better career to have than working for an employee-owned company. So I think the product, service, all that stuff becomes secondary for me. It's the culture, and just being able to work for an ESOP company is super special. I got 20 more years to go, so they're either going to have to kick me out or, you know, I don't plan on leaving anywhere. So
that's great. Yeah, the ESOPs have remarkable tenure. People feel their voice matters. They feel trusted and cared about, and they see a long-term potential for financial differentiation. It's a great recipe to attract and retain talent. It's one of the great strengths of the ESOP, and where there's more attention to ESOPs for some of those retention capabilities. Corey, most of our listeners probably know who you are, but if we have some new listeners to the Owner to Owner podcast, could you introduce yourself, a little bit about yourself? And then I'll bring us back to asking you the same question about what ownership means to you.
Sure. I'm Corey Rosen. I'm the founder of the National Center for Employee Ownership. And I founded the center in 1980. I'd been working on Capitol Hill for a few years, got involved in some of the ESOP legislation, and decided this was really a fabulous idea that not many people knew about at the time. People didn't know if it worked, and if it did work, what made it work. And so the NCEO, the National Center for Employee Ownership, was created to have an organization that could provide that kind of information, do research on whether this was a good idea and what made it a good idea if it was, and make that information available. So that's what we do. And I was director of the NCEO for 30 years, decided that every organization needs to change its leadership at, you know, 30 years is enough. And Lauren Rogers has been our director for the last 12 years, I guess, now. And I'm sort of a close to full-time volunteer because I love it. So in terms of what ownership means to me, and ownership, of course, has been my passion to try to help this idea spread beyond where it's been. And I think if we, you know, if you think of an idea, so imagine there's an idea that helps companies perform better, that provides employees with 2 to 3 times the retirement assets as other kinds of retirement plans, and 50% of the workforce is in no retirement plan at all, so it's infinitely better than all of that, that leads to much improved retention for employees, 1/3 to 1/5 the layoffs of employees. It's good for the communities these companies are located in, because people leave their jobs with enough money to buy a house or a car, or send their kids to college or whatever. And this idea, aside from really working well, was one of the very few things that Elizabeth Warren and Tommy Tuberville and James Risch and Kirsten Gillibrand agree on, where Republicans and Democrats both love it without exception. You'd think, we need an idea like that. We should be standing on hilltops and screaming about, hey, here's an idea that actually works. Pay attention. And the frustration that John and I felt in writing this book was people aren't paying attention to it. All the nostrums about how to fix the economy, either, yeah, they might work, but they're not politically feasible, or they're politically feasible and they're so blah because the only thing people can agree on is pretty bland stuff. Then if we had an idea that actually meets those criteria, shouldn't we be talking about it? So that's what we're trying to accomplish with the book.
That's great. That's great. So to put you on the spot with the big question, with your 40 plus years, what does ownership mean to Corey Rosen?
When I started this organization, I thought of ownership in a couple of different ways, and I still do. One is ownership means wealth security, means the opportunity to have a secure retirement, to have enough money to feel like I don't need to worry every day about, am I going to make it or not? You know, Sarah was really eloquent, I think, about why that matters so much. And matters so much, not just financially, but the psychological impact of that wealth insecurity can be pretty devastating. But it also meant dignity. It isn't simply people having a stake in the capitalist outcome of where they work, but being treated as if they really mattered in the company, treated as people, people who have ideas and can identify problems. And I thought at the outset, and the research has borne this out, that if companies will do that, if they will treat people like people and listen to their ideas with genuine humility and the assumption that anyone can have a good idea or identify an important problem, that the company is going to perform a whole lot better. I mean, imagine if you have a company, remember, Jesse, I saw something once that Hypertherm generated about 2 or 3 usable ideas per employee per year. Mm. Imagine you have a company that does that, I say to people. Wouldn't your company be a lot better company if you did that? And everybody says, well, of course it would. And that's ownership too.
Yeah. Yeah. Continuous improvement is the ultimate ownership behavior. If you can have people feel safe to raise their voice and question things, tell them directly, you are the expert. I'm standing in your workspace wanting to learn. Those sorts of differences that most people, you know, hope for at an employer. And we see them come in here and we see it in other ESOPs where it takes people a little bit of getting used to that. It's right. Remarkable. It's remarkable if you have the experts unleash their creative problem solving and move more dollars over to savings and profit sharing and share value. It's just a beautiful, absolutely beautiful thing. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Corey. So what I'd like to do here, so Sarah and Tyson, I talked to a lot of people about ownership. I see you both as very important voices in ownership. So I thought it'd be a lot of fun to be able to hear your perspective on the book, but then invite Corey to add comment or color, and then give a chance for the three of you to make a connection that can be beneficial to the three of you after today. So Sarah, if we can jump right in, what's something from the book that you want to start with, and we can look to Corey to have comment, and then Tyson will go to you, and we'll keep going like that the rest of our conversation.
Sure. Yeah. One of the, like I said before, at the very beginning, I, being new in my career, know very little about how ownership works in general outside of an ESOP company. And since being in an ESOP company, that's really all I've learned about is how employee ownership works. So one of the first points in the book that caught my eye was when we talk about how capitalism operates outside of an ESOP or outside of employee ownership. And when I say that, I mean in, you know, the people who own the company are the all they really care about is profit, especially when you talk publicly traded companies, private equity firms. It was really interesting to me that you pointed out, like, their focus is on the short-term profits. How much can we jack up that share price right now in the next quarter or the next 6 months or in the next year to make our shareholders happy? Because that's all they care about is profit. They don't care about how we're doing with our employees, how we treat our employees. They don't care how we're affecting the environment. I mean, that is coming more and more to be important, but it still takes a backseat. I mean, we see today a lot of these companies who say they're environmentally conscious really aren't. They're just changing it, the wording, to make it look like they're better because, again, all they care about is profits. And I thought, like, the key way to get people to care about the long-term profits of the company is to give that ownership to the people. Because exactly like you said, when it's a family-owned company or when a founder starts a business, that's their baby, right? They don't care as much about profits as they care about the success of the company, about how their customers are treated, about how their employees are treated, about being a part of the community in which they are founded. But as soon as they sell to a bigger corporation, that corporation, those values tend to get lost in translation because that shift gets made into caring more about profit. So by selling to an employee-owned company, you keep those values because the people running the company are the people doing the day-to-day work. So obviously they're going to care first about how employees are treated because they are the owners. And they're going to care about how their customers are treated because it's their company. They're going to care about the community in which they're rooted because all the employees most likely come from that community or live in that community. So they want that company to have a good rep, to give back to the community in which they live in. And it's kind of a no-brainer when you think about it that way. It's like, well, why not? If it's going to make companies more successful, it's going to make them more loved in their communities. It's going to make the employees happier and wealthier and more secure. It's kind of a no-brainer. And you actually did have a question on here too of, like, does being an owner impact the way you work? It absolutely does. I mean, I've actually run into a couple situations in which I've seen co-owners struggling and other co-owners coming up with solutions on how to help them, when in other companies where I've worked, they would have been like, well, that's on them. Their success or failure is on them. And right. It doesn't even come down to, like, what the company's doing or how I can improve the company. It's if I see someone struggling or if I see somewhere that I can help, I'm going to hop in and help find someone's always on deck to help everyone else out. And you don't see that in these larger companies. I definitely didn't see it in Anheuser-Busch when we went through a contract change for the union, and they gave all the grandfathered employees a bonus if they voted in things that would take benefits away from future employees of the company. That was really disheartening. When I was first coming into the job world, I'm like, okay, if I get a job here full time, well, I already know my benefits are worse than everyone who works around me, but they all got bonuses to vote in something that's going to help the shareholders of Anheuser-Busch, but that doesn't help the employees at all. And that was so disheartening to see. And then when I come to an ESOP and learn, like, okay, that will never happen here because we own it. We get to make those calls. We're not going to encourage our co-owners to do something against their values because that would not be good for the company long term. So that was one of my biggest takeaways from the book.
Thanks. Corey, do you have a follow-up or insights you want to add to Sarah's insight?
Yeah, Sarah, that's really well put. And thank you. Thanks for reading the book. When we say, John and I say, ownership is broken, that's part of it, that there's this short-term focus on the next quarter, the next year, if you're private equity, flipping the company in 3 to 5 years. The other part where ownership is broken is that it's so concentrated. And so very, you know, three families own more wealth than 40% of the U.S. population combined. Now, you could put a group of people in a large convention center lunch, and they would have more wealth than 99% of the rest of the people. Now, this is crazy stuff, and it's gotten more and more concentrated. And what we've done over the years is focus on income. that, you know, we would say, well, let's find a way for people's wages to be better. And that's really important to be sure. But wages have been stagnant for the last 40 years or so, since the late 1970s. But returns to equity have grown very quickly. So the inventor of ESOPs, Louis Kelso, was right. If we're going to have an economy that works for people in this economy, we need to think about ownership and not just about income. So ownership is broken in that way, too, that there are simply too few owners. And finally, it's broken in the sense that the people who do own stock in, say, a public company, that's really a misnomer. You know, if you or I buy stock, or even a pension fund buy stock in a public company, it's more akin to placing a bet on a horse at the racetrack. We aren't really focusing on what can we do as investors to help provide this company with money to grow long term. Nobody thinks that when they buy stock, right? But that's what this sort of connotative sense of ownership is. I'm an owner. I'm investing in this company. No, you're not. You're an owner. You're just betting on what's going to happen with this company. If you're an employee owner, it's a whole other story.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. Tyson, what's the key takeaway for you from the book?
So there were a couple kind of words that, and just some quotes that jumped out to me. I know one, and this was related to Kelso with the Capitalist Manifesto, and Corey kind of touched on this, you know, already, but just really the statement that he made, which I believe was in that book, was no one should have to live on labor income alone. And, you know, that's for him to be saying that. I mean, one, I'm just impressed for, I think, what was that, published in 1958? So the fact that there was this vision even then of really what a different version of capitalism can look like is impressive. And that, you know, he had that, I guess, foresight to see that. And when you do really reflect on just any of us as workers, though, especially lower to middle class and how the system is set up, it is hard. I mean, it makes it hard for people to succeed when we're expecting them, hey, oh, by the way, what are you doing for retirement? You have to use your wages to kind of set that aside. So the power of the ESOP is obviously, yeah, it's you can use your wages to, obviously, we need to put food on the table today and take care of that, you know, but while at the same time, we're giving people, you know, we're giving them that avenue to where they don't have to worry about setting aside a bunch of money for, you know, for that retirement, because it's kind of taken care of. As part of that, you know, then there was this is the first time I've heard this, but we've all heard a lot of like redistribution of wealth, you know, it's because that's what society needs. It's a redistribution of wealth because of the 1% and everything. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think, but how that's worded, there was where there was redistribution versus pre-distribution, you know, related to kind of the ESOP side. And I think when people hear redistribution, you think, It's a win-lose situation, you know. Well, if I got to redistribute, then someone's, you know, there's less money, you know, there's money coming out of my pocket. It's just going to go to somebody else, right? When I don't necessarily think of it that way within an ESOP, I think, you know, it is a kind of pre-distribution of, you know, the profits that we make as a company. But it's from my experience, I think, It's a win-win for everybody involved, not only people at the top, but everybody at the bottom. And even more so when, again, you give people that ownership stake, I think your profitability and performance as a company would be even higher than what it potentially would be with a handful of people, you know, controlling the wealth at the very top and trying to make all the decisions to do something. One other kind of, again, key takeaway for me, which I shared earlier, but as you read, which Corey spoke to, I mean, all the benefits that you can kind of link to, you know, being an ESOP company and from job security, whatever else, one, it made me much more grateful and just a reminder of how lucky I am to be a part of, you know, of with Pacific Steel and Recycling and how thankful I am for that. When you look at, I think it said there's, what, 14 million people, I think, you know, can say that they're employee owners, you know, kind of in the private industry. And there's 100 plus million workers that are out there that can't necessarily say that. And that one shows you how much more opportunity there is to obviously try to really spread this model into different places. And there's a lot of names thrown out in the book that you can consider kind of being, whether it's the founding fathers or, really, who do we have to thank for kind of beating this drum? And I mean, obviously it starts with Louis Kelso and very early on, but just so you know, I have Corey Rosen written down on my notes, one of the guys, whether he was on this call or not, I was going to make sure I gave tribute to the great Corey Rosen. So that is, 40 years of, him fighting for this visionary kind of business model that can really redefine what capitalism can look like in the future. And I'm not even the founder of the NCEO, and I'm frustrated for not seeing as much growth within the ESOP community, as I feel like there should be. Because when you really talk about it and look at the benefits, it is a no-brainer. And I feel like, I think as Sarah alluded to as well, I think so many people are frustrated and they're not fulfilled with work and they want more out of work and corporate, Wall Street to corporate America has a black eye. And I remember my sister, she probably a conversation I had with her a couple months ago. She was like, I'll never work for a corporation, and that says something, and you just wish you could give her those avenues of, hey, I hear you. Here's an employee owned company to work for, give that a shot and it'll change your life. So
that's great.
Those are a few takeaways.
That's great. Well, I appreciate it because I want to amplify the book as well because I think it's an important resource. Go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to say, I while you were talking, Tyson, a couple of your points brought up more thoughts for me. I mean, the book also talks about the complete disparate pay that, CEOs and top executives receive compared to the people who are actually have boots on the ground doing the work that you couldn't have the company without. And that's bringing an eye to that and all the tax code that's been written and changed to support capitalism as it exists right now in the US. And all the ideas, Corey, that you and John mention in the book that would just tweaks to tax code that would make ESOP so much more appealing for companies to sell to. If we can do it for all these, the 1% and the capitalism as it exists right now, It's, again, as I said, no brainer. Why wouldn't we just make these small tweaks to tax code? And I can understand your frustration because when we talk about the economy now, and it's one of the biggest things that candidates are always campaigning on. Presidents are always talking about the economy and what they would do to increase taxes or decrease taxes. It's always a fight. But like you said, employee ownership's not a fight. It's a bipartisan idea. And honestly, there's a lot of the answers. It's not the only answer, but it's a great avenue that should be explored more, that people should know more about. So it's frustrating that we don't have candidates talking more about employee ownership. We don't have it more in the limelight when the economy is such a big ticket item every single year. When there's an answer that's been tried, and it has proof that it works, and we have more ideas on how to make it better, but no one wants to listen. I can imagine how frustrating it is, especially when everyone seems to agree on all the issues that capitalism presents as it exists in the U.S. right now. Why can't we talk about how to fix it?
Yeah. Corey, you want to add thoughts? And then what I'd like to do is bring in the statement from Don Case after that. What are your thoughts, Corey, on what Sarah and Tyson have been sharing with you?
It's really well stated, and I think there's one other side of this that's important to recognize as well, that the people who are the executives in these companies like being executives a lot better, my sense is, than people in other companies. Because it's really cool as a leader to walk around the company and seeing people being engaged in helping improve the company. You have just this sense of community and doing the right thing. And to be even a little more grandiose, I think it's not just ownership that's broken in this country. I think the country's broken. And people just don't have much social trust anymore. People think the system is unfair to them for whatever reason, whether you're on the left or the right, your reasons may be different, but people increasingly feel, oh, you know, we're being left out, other people are getting a better deal. What ownership does is help address that problem by creating this sense of common purpose and community where people who in a workplace or in the polity couldn't agree on a lot of things can agree about this and come together with other people as people in solving problems. And from that, I think you could really build outward. Well, if we could work together on this, maybe there's other things we could work on. But I think we're desperately in need of solutions like this.
That's great. That's great. All right. Well, I want to do, it's getting close to time. I want to do is have you thinking a little bit on what are the three words today in this conversation with the four of us? What three words would you use to describe ownership? We're going to finish by letting you really boil it down. And then we'll probably close from there. So while you're pondering that, I want to bring John Case's voice into our conversation because he couldn't join us today. Corey and I wrote this book for two reasons. One was simply to share the news about employee-owned companies. They perform better than their peers. They're much more likely to involve employees in workplace decisions. When you come right down to it, they're more fun to work at. And I think the three of us have supported John's statement. Who wouldn't rather be working for themselves rather than for some absentee owners? Then there's the bigger picture, which is the other reason. People who work for a wage or salary in our country often get a raw deal. Many have to live paycheck to paycheck. Many have lousy jobs where they are treated just like any other hired hand, and many worry about being laid off. Meanwhile, the Wall Street stockholders, private equity firms, and other owners do very well indeed. But employee ownership changes the terms of the equation. It enables everyday people to build up a nest egg and to enjoy some measure of financial security. It keeps the profits of the business inside the community, where they help to build the community's prosperity. That's the argument we thought was worth making. Sure, we live in a divided country, politically speaking. Nearly everyone on both sides of the aisle supports more employee ownership in principle. Just have to help them make it a priority so that more and more people can become employee owners. Statement from John Case, co-author with Corey Rosen on the book. That was great to hear that from John and his passion shared with Corey for ownership and equity and changing the game. So I want to bring us around to what is proven over the years to, yes, be the other hard question. The first one is, you did very well with what does ownership mean to you? But can you take something that becomes a way of working for a lot of us, almost a little bit of an identity? Can you reduce it down to three words? So Sarah, if you want to go first, what three words today would you use to describe employee ownership?
Yeah, this is one I always give a lot of thought. The first word that comes to mind is empowering, exactly because of what you said. Employee owners have more of a say in the day-to-day interactions in the workplace. We actually have a suggestion box at AdMix that employee owners use on a pretty regular basis where they submit ideas that they might have for bettering the company or concerns they might have or questions they don't understand that get submitted and reviewed. And we often talk about those during our monthly rally, which we have on a monthly basis, a meeting in which we go over all the financials, we go over our long-term goals, our short-term goals, what's going on in the next few weeks. So everyone's on the same page. It's so empowering to co-owners to know, like, I'm not just an owner in name, I'm an owner in practice as well. Secure is the next word that comes to mind. Again, for all the reasons we've discussed, it gives security in my day-to-day life while I'm working for the company, and it gives security to me when I retire from the company or leave the company later on. Because as we've said over and over again, because of the ESOP, I can focus on using my salary for my day-to-day life, for my short-term goals, and I can use the ESOP for my long-term goals. And then the third word that I'd use to describe ownership is reassuring. And it goes right in hand with, you know, empowering and security. But or actually, the third word that I originally was going to go with was fun. And it seems simple and it seems easy, but it is fun because everyone, when you work for an employee-owned business, like, I never woke up when I was 5 years old and says, sell mixers someday. But here I am 2 years in and I'm so enthusiastic about it. I can talk to you all day about your mixing application. So you want to disperse gums and water? I know exactly how to do that. Let's talk all day long. And most people, when they work for something like that, they don't care because they answer to the man, right? But when you're an employee-owned company, You are the man. You get to have fun with it and get excited about it because everyone cares about it and everyone takes ownership of that. Like, this is my company. We manufacture this here in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Like 98% of our products come from right here in New Hampshire. So, I mean, that's something to be really proud of. And just the culture around ESOPs in general are so much more fun with the different team building activities we do and the fun events we get to take a part of. It's unlike anywhere I've worked before. So, empowering, security, and fun.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Tyson, yep. Three words today to describe ownership.
I have 10 words written down, but I'm not going to use 10, but it's so hard. You can't. That's such an unfair question. But that's what makes it fun. So I get the exercise. So the only way I can try to answer your question within the guidelines is I'm going to say everything that Sarah said. So then that gives me a few extra descriptions there. I would say purpose is definitely a big one for us. I think it completely, again, gives you a different sense of why you're coming to work every single day, which is special. And again, you're just not clocking in and clocking out. You're a part of something much bigger. Blessed, for me personally, it's the longer you're with an ESOP company, again, you continue to be even more appreciative of stumbling into that, you know, for a lot of us. So I'm extremely blessed to be a part of, to work for an ESOP company. Third, I'd say, I'm going to just use one. Okay. I'll say family, you know, for a lot of us here and even the people in my department now, I've been with, again, Pacific for 11 years. It's very special to feel like you're going to be able to finish your career with some of the same people that you started with. And I don't think you see that. I think this day and age, there's a lot of job hopping and you know, finding kind of that next big thing, you know, the next best thing, or, hey, I can make an extra, you know, X amount an hour by going over to the, you know, the competition or something like that, right? The next best thing is, I mean, at least, yeah, I mean, when you're working for an ESOP company, I just don't think you're not hopping around. It's you do have the privilege of, I've worked with people for 11 years up to this point, and I know I'm going to be able to work with some of those same people for the next 15 to 20 years. And that's when you get to work with, especially the right people, you know, when you can work with people in your career for 20 plus years, there is a strong family that you kind of do develop that greater sense of family and community that's super special that a lot of people, I don't think, get to experience in their career. So that's, those are my three words.
you navigated the intentional constraints very gracefully, both of you. You did.
That's
well.
Hard. But hard.
Well, I appreciate the mention of, you know, you say here, you know, at Hypertherm, a lot of us say that, you know, been here for a while, is we're kind of growing up together. You know, you see, you know, families start and kids going to college, and you have a long time in between to put your heads down and work. And so I think it's great to talk about the welcome the new voices, but also acknowledge that opportunity, which is increasingly rare and less secure in our country. And ownership does bring that around. So I appreciate you bringing that in. Corey, to round us out, what three words would you use today to describe employee ownership?
So the ones I would choose are dignity, security, and fairness. Those are things that a lot of jobs don't have. Maybe they got one, maybe they got two, probably don't have all three. Yeah. And that's something that employee ownership companies really strive for.
That's great. Appreciate it. Well, I want to thank our guests today, Sarah Limoges from AdMix, a neat company to watch. You'd be amazed at the reach of this ESOP in Londonderry, New Hampshire, for national brands and their reach into the economy. Tyson Hendrickson from Pacific Steel, multi-location, seasoned, mature, very successful ESOP. And Corey Rosen, founder of the NCO and author of the book Ownership, Reinventing Companies, Capitalism, and Who Owns What, written in partnership with John Case. I'm Jesse Tyler, host of the Owner to Owner podcast, doing this to amplify ownership, hear voices, and have conversations like this that I think we could use more to move the movement forward. This podcast grew out of a friendship with Brett Kiesling, and really enjoy doing this work for the EO Podcast Network and supporting the NCEO and other voices like Tyson's and Sarah's. So thank you very much to our listeners. I hope you got some great insights and that you go and buy Corey and John's book and learn more about ownership.
If you're going to buy it, it's cheaper on our website.
Yeah, on the NCO website.
But you can buy it Amazon or other places too.
Yeah. So we're going to directly plug the NCO option because it's more affordable and it goes to one of the great causes, founding causes of ownership. So again, from the Owner Podcast and the EO Podcast Network, thank you very much. And we'll look forward to further conversations about ownership. Thanks to all of you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Jesse.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook at EO Podcast Network and on Twitter at ESOP Podcast. This podcast has been produced by Brett Kiesling for the EO Podcast Network. Original music composed by Max Kiesling. Branding and marketing by Bitsy Plus Design. And I'm Bitsy McCann.